Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Forest Kingdom Saga, Hawk and Fisher. Narrated by Terence Aselford, with performances by Danny Gavigan, Ren Casey, Christopher Sheeran, James Konacek, Yasmin Toison, Eric Messner, Nanette Savard, David Coyne, Michael Glenn, Scott McCormick, Michael John Casey, Drew Kopus, Richard Rowan, Barbara Pinellini, Jeff Allen, Bobby Aselford, Ken Jackson, Joe Brack, M.B. Van Dorn, Lily Beacon, and Ted Stoddard. Hawk and Fisher, Book 3, The God Killer. They come and they go. There are beings on the street of gods. More and less than human, they inspire worship and adoration, fear and awe, and dreams of endless power. No one knows who or what the beings are. They existed before men built the Street of Gods, and will exist long after the street is nothing more than rubble and lost memories. Some say the beings are distillations of specific realities, abstract concepts given shape and form by human fears or wishes, or simply by the times themselves. Others claim they are simply supernatural creatures, intrusions from other planes of existence. No one knows. They are real and unreal, both and neither. They are beings of power, and the Street of Gods is theirs and theirs alone. They come and they go. Winter took residence early in the city port of Haven, ushered in on blustering winds full of sleet, snow, and bitter cold. Thick blankets of snow lay heavily across the roofs and city walls, and hoarfrost pearled the brickwork. Down in the street, the first of the day's pedestrian traffic struggled through the muddy slush, slipping and sliding and cursing each other through numb lips. The cold wind cut through the thickest furs, and frostbite gnawed savagely at exposed flesh. Winter embraced Haven, honing its cutting edge on the slow-moving and the infirm. It was early in the morning, the sun little more than a bloody promise on the starless night. The street lamps glowed bravely against the dark, islands of amber light in an endless gloom. Ruddy lanterns hung from horses and carts, bobbing like live coals on the night. And trudging through the cold and dark came Hawk and Fisher, husband and wife, captains in the city guard. Somewhere up ahead in the narrow streets and alleyways of the north side lay a dead man. It wasn't clear yet why he was dead. Apparently, the investigating constables were still trying to find some of the pieces. Murder was nothing new in the north side. Every city harbors a dark and cruel side to its nature, and Haven was no different. Haven was a dark city, the rotten apple of the Low Kingdoms. But murder and corruption flourished openly in the north side, fueled by greed, hate, and bitter need. People died there every day for reasons of passion, desperation, or business. Nevertheless, this latest in a line of bloody murders shocked even the hardened north siders. So the guard sent in Hawk and Fisher. There wasn't much that could shock them. Hawk was tall, dark, but no longer handsome. A series of old scars ran down the right side of his face, and a black silk patch covered his right eye. He wore a long furred jacket and trousers and a heavy black guardsman's cloak. He didn't look like much. He was lean and wiry rather than muscular, and he was beginning to build a stomach. He wore his long dark hair swept back from his forehead and tied with a silver clasp at the nape. He had only just turned 30, but already there were streaks of gray in his hair. One might easily dismiss Hawk as just another Bravo, perhaps a little past his prime and going to seed. But there was something about Hawk, something hard and unyielding and almost sinister. People walked quietly around him and were careful to keep their voices calm and reasonable. On his right hip, Hawk carried a short-handled axe instead of a sword. He was very good with an axe. He had lots of practice in his 5 years as a guard. Isabel Fisher walked at Hawk's side, echoing his pace and stance with the naturalness of long companionship. She was tall, easily 6 feet in height, lithely muscular, and her long blonde hair fell to her waist in a single thick plait, weighted at the tip with a polished steel ball. She was in her mid to late 20s, and handsome rather than beautiful. There was a raw-boned harshness to her face that contrasted strongly with her deep blue eyes and generous mouth. Somewhere in the past, something scoured all the human weaknesses out of her, and it showed. Like Hawk, she wore the guard's standard uniform for winter, with a sword at her left hip. Her hand rested comfortably on the pommel. A thin mist hung about the street, though the weather wizards had been trying to clear it for hours. The cold seeped relentlessly into Hawk's bones as he strode along, and he stamped his boots hard into the slush to try to keep some warmth in his feet. His hands were curled into fists inside his gloves, but it didn't seem to be helping much. Hawk hated the cold, hated the way it leached all the warmth and life out of him. And in particular, he hated being out in the cold and the dark at such an ungodly hour of the morning. But this shift paid the best, and he and Fisher needed the money, so... Hawk shrugged irritably, trying to get his cloak to fall more comfortably about him. He hated wearing a cloak. It always got in the way during fights. But braving the winter cold without a cloak was about as sensible as skinny dipping in an alligator pool. You tended to lose important parts of your anatomy. So Hawk wore his cloak and moaned about it a lot. He shrugged his shoulders again and tugged surreptitiously at the cloak's hem. Fisher didn't even look at him.
Leave that cloak alone. It looks fine.
Doesn't feel right. The day's supposed to get warmer anyway. If the mists clear up, I think I might drop the cloak off somewhere and pick it up at the end of the shift.
You'll do no such thing. You know you get colds and flus easily, and I'm not nursing you through another one of those. Whew, a couple of degrees of fever and you'd think you're dying.
Hawk stared straight ahead, pretending he hadn't heard that.
Where is this body we're supposed to look at anyway?
Silver Street. Just down there, on the left. It sounded fairly gruesome. Do you suppose it'll look like the others?
I hope so. I hate to think there was more than one homicidal maniac running around on our patch.
Ugh, I hate maniacs. They never play by the rules. Trying to figure out their motives is enough to drive you crazy.
Hawk smiled slightly, but the smile didn't last long. If this corpse was as bad as the others he'd seen, it wasn't going to be a pretty sight. A guard constable found the first body down by the Devil's Hook, hanging from a lamppost on a rope made from its own intestines. The second body adorned the length of Hawthorne Alley. The killer got inventive with the third victim on Lower Eel Street. The hands had been nailed to a wall. The head was found floating in a water cask. There was no trace of the body's genitals. Hawk and Fisher turned into Silver Street and found a crowd already gathered despite the early hour. Nothing like a good murder to bring out a crowd. Hawk wondered briefly what the hell all these people were doing out on the streets at such an unearthly hour, but he knew better than to ask. They'd only lie. The North Side never slept. There was always somebody ready to make a deal and someone else ready to cheat him. Hawk and Fisher pushed their way through the crowd. Everyone in the North Side knew Hawk and Fisher. Hawk paused briefly at the thick line of blue chalk dust the guard doctor laid down to keep the crowd back.
Once more unto the breach.
He walked quickly over the line. The silver torque at his wrist, his badge of office, protected him from the ward's magic, but the blue line always made him nervous. He once made the mistake of crossing the line on a day he absentmindedly left his torque at home, and the agonizing muscle cramps lasted the best part of an hour. That was why the crowd pushed right up to the edge of the line, but made no move to cross it, thus ensuring the scene of the crime remained intact and the guard doctor had room to work. A guard constable stood by at a respectful distance from the body. His dark red cloak and tunic looked almost garish against the winter snow. He nodded affably to Hawk and Fisher. The doctor worked squatting in the blood-stained snow beside the body, but rose to his feet to nod briefly at the two captains. He was a short, delicate man with pale face and eyes and large, clever hands. His official cloak was too large for him and looked like a hand-me-down, but he wore the standard look of calm assurance all doctors seem to receive along with their diplomas.
I'm glad you're here, Captain Hawk. Captain Fisher, I'm Dr. Yeager. I haven't had much time with the body yet, but I can tell you this much. The killer didn't use a weapon. He did all this with his bare hands.
Hawk looked at the body and had to fight to keep his face impassive. The arms had been torn out of their sockets. The torso had been ripped open from throat to groin, and the internal organs pulled out and strewn across the bloody snow. The legs had been broken repeatedly. Jagged splinters of bone pierced the tattered skin. There was no sign of the head.
Hell's teeth.
Hawk tried to imagine how much sheer strength was needed to destroy a body so completely, and a disturbing thought came to him.
Doctor, is there any chance this could have been a non-human assailant? Werewolf, vampire, ghoul?
Well, there's no evidence of blood drainage. You can see for yourself how much there is around the body. There's no tooth or claw marks to indicate a shapeshifter. And apart from the missing head, everything's here somewhere. No evidence of feasting. No, Captain, the odds are this is your standard homicidal maniac with a very nasty disposition.
Just great. How long before the forensic sorcerer gets here?
Well, your guess is as good as mine. He's been contacted, but you know how he hates to be dragged from his nice warm bed at this hour of the morning.
All right. We can't wait. The trail will get cold. We'd better use your magic to get things started, Doctor. How much can you do?
Not a lot. When he finally gets here, the forensic sorcerer might be able to recreate the entire killing and show us exactly what happened. The best I can give you is a glimpse of the killer's face.
That's more than we've got from the last three killings.
Yeah, we were lucky with this one. Death couldn't have taken place more than half an hour ago. The chances of divining the face are very good.
Wait a minute. I thought you needed the head for that. So you could see the killer's face in the victim's eyes.
Yeager smiled condescendingly.
Medical sorcery has progressed far beyond those old superstitions, Captain Fisher.
He knelt down beside the body, grimacing as the bloody slush stained his clothes, and bent over the torso. The fingers of his left hand moved slowly in a complex pattern. Blood gushed suddenly from the neck of the torso, spilling out in a steady stream to form a wide pool. Yeager gestured abruptly, and the blood stopped flowing. Ripples spread across the pool, as though disturbed by something under the surface. Hawk and Fisher watched, fascinated, as a face slowly formed in the blood. The features were harsh, brooding, and quite distinct. Hawk and Fisher bent forward and studied the face thoroughly, committing it to memory. The image suddenly disappeared, and the blood was only blood again. Hawk and Fisher straightened up, and Yeager got to his feet again. Hawk nodded appreciatively to him.
Anything else you can do for us?
No, not really. From the pattern of the bloodstains, I don't think the victim had time to struggle much, which suggests that most, if not all, the mutilations took place after death.
Cause of death?
Take your pick. Any one of those injuries would have been enough to kill him.
Hawk gestured for the guard constable to come over and join them. He was a dark, heavyset man in his mid-40s with a 20-year star on his uniform. He had the calm, resigned look of the seasoned guard who'd seen it all before. He glanced briefly at the body as he came to stand beside it, but nothing showed in his face.
Constable Roberts at your service, Captain Hawk, Captain Fisher.
Who found the body?
A couple of kids coming back from a party. Merchant's families. Took a shortcut through the north side on a dare and found a bit more than they bargained for. They're in the house opposite with my partner, having a cup of tea. It's good for shock tea.
They see anything? Apart from the body?
Apparently not, Captain.
Well, we'd better talk to them anyway. See if you can move that crowd along. The forensic sorcerer should be here soon, and he hates working in front of an audience.
The constable nodded, and Hawk and Fisher headed for the house he'd indicated, stepping around the bloodstains where they could.
You know, it's times like this I seriously think about getting out of this job. You'd think you've seen every nasty sight and spectacle the North Side can throw at you, and something like this happens. Oh, how can one human being do that to another?
Hawk felt like shrugging, but didn't. It was a serious question.
Drugs? Passion? Possession? Maybe just plain crazy? There are all sorts in the North Side, on their way up or on their way down. If a man's got any darkness in his soul, the North Side will bring it out. Don't take it so personally, Isabel. We've seen worse. Just concentrate on finding the clues that will help us nail the bastard.
The young people who found the body sat in the house, too shocked and disoriented even to think of making a fuss about leaving. They were clearly merchant class by their dress, lower middle by the look of them, and looked distinctly out of place in the dim, smoky kitchen. A motherly washerwoman fussed over them. Another guard constable sat comfortably by the fire, keeping an eye on them. He wore a 10-year star, but looked like he'd spent most of those years indoors. He nodded pleasantly to Hawk and Fisher, but made no move to get up. The two young people looked to be in their early teens, the girl a bit younger than the boy. Hawk drew up a chair opposite them and concentrated his questions on the boy. The girl was half asleep in her chair, worn out by shock and emotional exhaustion.
I'm Captain Hawk of the City Guard. This is my partner, Captain Fisher. What's your name, kid?
Fairfax, sir. Calvin Fairfax.
All right, Calvin. Tell us about finding the body.
We were walking down Wall Street, Belinda and I, when we heard something. Footsteps, like someone running away. Then Belinda saw spots of blood on the ground, leading into the next street. She didn't want to get involved, but I thought we should at least take a look in case someone was injured and needed help. We walked a little way down the street, and that's when we saw the body.
Did you see anyone else in Silver Street?
No, there was no one else there. Belinda screamed, but no one came to help. A few people looked out their windows at us, but they didn't want to get involved. Finally, the guard constables heard her and came to see what was happening.
What time was this?
About 3 o'clock. I heard the tower bell sound the hour not long before. The constables took over once they saw the body. We've been waiting here ever since. We're very late. Our parents will be worried. Can we go now, please?
In a while. The forensic sorcerer will want to see you when he finally gets here. But after that, you're free to go. You'll have to make a statement for the coroner's court, but you can do that anytime. And in future, stay out of the north side. This isn't a safe place to be walking around, especially early in the morning.
Don't worry. I never want to see this place again for the rest of my life. We wouldn't even have come this way if Luther hadn't dared us to walk past the boathouse.
Hawk's ears pricked up. The boathouse. The name rang a faint but very definite bell.
What's so special about the boathouse?
It's supposed to be haunted. People who've seen things. Heard things. We thought it would be a lark.
His mouth twisted sourly.
We thought it would be fun.
Hawk talked reassuringly with him for a while, and then he and Fisher left the house and walked back out to Silver Street. The cold morning air seemed even harsher after the comfortable warmth of the kitchen.
Boathouse. I know that name from somewhere.
You should. It's been mentioned in our briefings for the past 3 nights. There are some indications the place may be haunted. Neighbors have complained of strange lights and sounds, and no one's seen the occupant for days. Since Bode is an alchemist and a sorcerer, no one's taking it too seriously yet. But there's no doubt it's got the neighbors rattled.
Beats me how you can take in all that stuff. It's all I can do to keep my eyes open at the beginning of the shift. I don't really wake up till I've been on the streets an hour.
Don't think I haven't noticed.
Where is this Bode house?
Just down the street and around the corner.
Coincidence?
Could be.
I don't believe in coincidence. I think we'd better take a look, just to be sure.
Might be a good idea to have a word with Constable Roberts first. This is his particular territory. He might know something useful.
Good idea. You're on the ball today, Isabel.
One of us has to be.
As it turned out, Constable Roberts wasn't much help.
Can't tell you anything definite about the house, Captains. I've heard a few things, but there are always rumors with the sorcerer's house. Bode's a quiet enough fellow, lives alone and keeps himself to himself. No one's seen him for a while, but that's not unusual. He often goes off on journeys. Since no one's been actually hurt or threatened, I've just let the place be. Bode wouldn't thank me for sticking my nose into his business, and I'm not getting a sorcerer mad at me for no good reason.
Hawk's mouth tightened, and for a moment he almost said something, but in the end he let it go. Looking out for number one was standard practice in Haven, even amongst the guard, especially amongst the guard.
Yeah, fair enough, Constable. I think we'll take a look anyway. You stay here until the forensic sorcerer gets here, and keep your eyes open. The killer could still be around here somewhere.
He got exact directions to Bode's house from Roberts. The sorcerer's house stood on the end of a row of fairly well-preserved tenements. Not too impressive, but not bad for the area. The window shutters were all firmly closed, and there was no sign of any light. Hawk tried to feel any uneasy atmosphere that might be hanging about the place, but either there wasn't one, or he was so cold by now he couldn't feel it. He took off his right glove and slipped his hand inside his shirt. Hanging around his neck on a silver chain was a carved bone amulet. Standard issue for all guards, the amulet could detect the presence of magic anywhere nearby. He held the amulet firmly in his hand, but the small piece of bone was still and quiet. As far as it was concerned, there was no magic at all in the vicinity, which was unusual, to say the least. A sorcerer's house should be crawling with defensive spells. He took his hand away and quickly pulled his glove back on, flexing his numbed fingers to drive out the cold.
Have you got the suppressor stone?
I thought you'd get around to that. You've been dying to try the thing out, haven't you?
Hawk shrugged innocently. The suppressor stone was the latest bright idea from the Council's Circle of Sorcerers. They weren't standard issue yet, but a number of guards volunteered to try them out. Working the streets of Haven, a guard needed every helpful device available. Theoretically, the suppressor stone could cancel out all magic within its area of influence. In practice, the range was very limited. It misfired as often as it worked, and they still weren't sure about side effects. Hawk couldn't wait to try it out. He loved new gadgets. That was why Fisher carried the stone.
Great big overgrown kid.
Hawk smiled, walked up to the front door, and studied it warily. It looked ordinary enough. There was a fancy brass door knocker, but Hawk didn't try it. Probably booby-trapped. Sorcerers were a suspicious lot. He knelt down suddenly as something caught his eye. Someone used the iron boot scraper recently. There was mud and slush, and a few traces of blood. Hawk was smiling as he straightened up. Sooner or later, they always made a mistake. You just had to be sharp enough to spot it. He looked at Fisher, and she nodded to show she'd seen it, too. They both drew their weapons.
All right. When in doubt, be direct.
He lifted his axe to strike at the door.
Hold it, Hawk. We could be wrong. If by some chance the sorcerer has come home and is just a slow answerer, he's not going to look too kindly on us if we break his door down. And if that isn't him in there, why warn him we're coming? I've got a better way.
She reached into a hidden pocket and pulled out a set of lockpicks. She bent over the door lock, fiddled expertly for a few seconds, and then pushed the door quietly ajar. Hawk looked impressed.
You've been practicing.
Never know when it might come in handy.
Hawk pushed the door open, revealing a dark, empty hall. He and Fisher stood where they were, weapons at the ready, studying the hallway.
There's bound to be some kind of security spell to keep strangers out. That's standard with all magic users.
So will it use the stone? That's what it's for.
Not so fast. If I was a sorcerer, I'd put a rider on my security spell, designed to go off if anybody messed with it.
Hawk frowned thoughtfully.
According to the constable, Bode's a fairly low-level sorcerer. Something like that would need more sophisticated magic.
Try the amulet again.
Hawk held the carved bone firmly in his hand, but it was still quiescent. As far as it was concerned, there wasn't any magic in the area. Hawk shook his head impatiently.
We're wasting time. We're going in there now.
Fair enough.
After you.
Oh, my hero.
They walked slowly into the dim hallway, side by side. They paused just inside the doorway, but nothing happened. Hawk found a lamp in a niche in the wall and lit it. The pale golden glow revealed a long, narrow hallway, open but not particularly inviting. The walls were bare, the floorboards dull and unpolished. There was a door to their right, closed, and a stairway straight ahead at the end of the hall. Fisher moved silently over to the door, listened a moment, and then eased it open. Hawk braced himself, axe at the ready. Fisher stepped quickly into the room, sword held out before her. Hawk moved quickly forward, holding up the lamp to light the room. There was no one there. Everything looked perfectly normal. Furniture, carpet, paintings, and tapestries on the walls. Nothing expensive, but comfortable. The two guards went back into the hall. They headed for the stairs.
Something's wrong here. According to the amulet, there's still no sign of any magic. But this house should be saturated with it. At the very least, there should be defensive spells all over the place. Industrial espionage is rife among magic users. There's always someone trying to steal your secrets.
They made their way to the top of the stairs. The sounds they made seemed very loud in the quiet. The lamplight bobbed around them, unable to make much impression on the darkness. The landing at the top of the stairs led off onto a narrow hallway. There were three doors, all firmly closed. Hawk and Fisher stood together, listening, but there was only the quiet.
Can you smell something, Isabel?
Yeah, something. Can't tell what it is or where it's coming from, though.
The nearest door suddenly flew open, slamming back against the passageway wall. Hawk and Fisher moved quickly to stand on guard, weapons at the ready. At first, Hawk thought the figure before them was some kind of beast, and it took him a moment to realize it was a man wrapped in furs. He was barely average height, but bulging with muscles, overdeveloped almost beyond reason. His furs were dark and greasy, covered with filth and dried blood. There was blood on his face and hands. He was grinning widely, his cheeks stretched to near distortion. Even so, Hawk had no trouble recognizing the face Dr. Jaeger had shown him in the pool of blood. The killer was carrying something in his right hand, and Hawk darted a glance at it. It was a severed head held by the hair. Hawk concentrated on the killer's face. The unnatural smile didn't falter, and the eyes were fixed and wild. His bearing was savage and menacing, but he made no move to attack them. Drugs? Possession? Insanity? Hawk took a firm hold on his axe. He remembered what the killer did to the body in Silver Street with his bare hands.
We're captains in the city guard. You're under arrest.
You can't stop me! I'm the Dark Man! Yeah.
He swung the severed head viciously at Hawk. Hawk stepped aside automatically. The head crashed into the wall and rebounded, leaving a bloody smudge behind it. Fisher stepped forward, her sword held out before her. The Dark Man slapped the blade aside with the flat of his hand and swung the severed head at her. She ducked, and the Dark Man darted back into the room he'd come from. Hawk and Fisher charged in after him, but the room was empty.
Oh, damn! How the hell did he manage that? He was only out of our sight for a second or two.
Place is probably full of sliding panels and secret passageways. He could be anywhere in the house by now.
Or out of it?
No, I don't think so. We've seen his face. He has to silence us, and he knows it. He'll be back. In the meantime, let's take a look around these rooms. Maybe we'll find a clue or something to explain what's going on.
Optimist.
They stood in a small, cozy bedchamber. The bed was empty, but the bedclothes had been pulled back. They felt cold and faintly damp to the touch. A light coat of dust covered the furniture. Hawk and Fisher poked around for a few minutes, but there was nothing significant to be found. They went back out into the hallway, keeping their weapons at the ready. The next room turned out to be some kind of laboratory. There were glass instruments and tubing, earthenware bowls, and stacked vials of chemicals. The room looked neat and undisturbed, but once again there was a layer of dust over everything. At the back of the room sat a simple desk with two drawers. Fisher opened them. Inside, she found nothing but a handful of papers, covered with complex equations that made no sense to either of them. Hawk put them back, and then paused and sniffed the air. The smell seemed somewhat stronger, and he had an uncomfortable suspicion he knew what it was. The third and last room was a study, small, compact, and tidy. Bookshelves covered one wall, packed with leather-bound volumes of varying sizes. A broad, functional desk, its top covered with scattered papers, stood in the center. The smell of death and decay was very strong. A dead man, dressed in sorcerer's black, posed limply in the chair by the desk. He'd been dead for some time. His head bowed forward, his chin resting on his chest.
Well, at least now we know what happened to the sorcerer Bode, and why there's no magic in this place. His protective spells must have collapsed when he died.
I don't think so. Protective spells don't work like that.
They couldn't have been very good spells. They didn't keep the killer out.
Yes. Interesting.
So, how did he die?
Good question. There's no obvious wound.
Hawk put the lamp down on the desk and gingerly took hold of the sorcerer's hair, tilting the head back. When he saw Bode's face, he almost let it drop forward again. The sorcerer had the same face as the Dark Man.
That's not possible. It can't be him. This man's been dead for days.
Hawk nodded and let the head fall forward again.
So what did we just fight? A ghost?
He started to wipe his fingers on his cape and then stopped as he realized what he just said. They looked at each other for a moment.
This house is supposed to be haunted.
Ghosts don't usually try to bash your brains out with a severed head. Not unless it's their own. And they're not usually built like dock workers, either.
Hawk looked back at the body as a thought struck him.
Relax, Isabel. This definitely isn't the Dark Man. The build's all wrong. This guy's about as well-developed as a sparrow. I've seen more muscles on a Leech Street whore.
The face is still the same, though. Maybe they're brothers. Twins.
Too obvious. Nothing's ever simple where magic users are concerned.
He leaned forward, and steeling himself against the smell, he searched the body carefully for the cause of death. It didn't take him long. There was a narrow puncture wound just under the sternum. Someone had stabbed Bode through the heart. Hawk readjusted the sorcerer's clothing, stood back, and frowned thoughtfully. One thrust, right through the heart. Very professional. Or very lucky. But even so, how had the killer gotten close enough to do it? Even a low-level sorcerer like Bode should have had more than enough magic to deal with a common assassin. Even assuming the killer had somehow gotten past the house's magical defenses, Bode had to have had some defenses, or a rival sorcerer would have wiped him out by now. Sorcery was a very competitive business, particularly in the north side. Maybe Bode knew his killer and invited him in. That would explain a lot, including why the sorcerer had died sitting quietly in his own study.
Hawk, I think you'd better take a look at this.
Hawk looked around. He saw Fisher studying the papers on the desk, flipping through a half dozen sheets, frowning intently. He moved over to join her.
Most of this is routine. Reports on experiments, memos to himself not to forget things, dates, addresses, and stuff like that. But this is something else. It seems Bode had to travel a lot to acquire certain ingredients for his experiments, which meant leaving his house unguarded, apart from the few magical defenses he'd been able to put together. According to this, Bode was a better alchemist than sorcerer, and he knew his defenses wouldn't keep out any really determined sorcerer. Being more than a little paranoid where his work was concerned, he put a lot of thought into protecting his home while he was away. He did think briefly about acquiring a familiar of some kind, but that meant dealing with some very unpleasant beings, most of which were well out of his league. So he made his own familiar. He used his knowledge of sorcery and alchemy to reach inside himself, extract all the hate and rage and violence, and place them inside a homunculus, a duplicate of himself, the Dark Man. The familiar was bound to the house and couldn't leave without Bode's permission. It made an excellent watchdog. Like you said, the North Side brings out the worst in people.
It does explain a lot. Presumably the Dark Man was out of the house when Bode was killed, and it's been running loose ever since, hating and killing because that's all it was ever designed to do. And now there's nothing left to hold it in check.
We're gonna have to kill it, Hawk. We can't reason with something like this.
We've gotta find it first, or wait for it to find us. Damn it, what was a low-level sorcerer like Bode doing, messing around with homunculi? Those things are strictly illegal.
This is Haven, remember?
This stuff is heavy, even for the North Side. The creation of a homunculus carries a mandatory death penalty if they catch you. Research into making homunculi has been banned for centuries. In some places, they still hang, draw, and quarter people just for owning books that mention the damn things.
What's so important about homunculi?
Like a great many other things, it all comes down to inheritance and bloodlines. How are you going to keep the family bloodlines pure if exact physical duplicates keep popping up all over the place? Homunculi make a mockery of inheritance laws. On top of that, there's always the possibility of someone important being murdered and then replaced by a duplicate. Not to mention how easy it would be for some sorcerer to create his own army of homunculi and hire it out to anyone with a grudge against the established order.
You've been reading up on this, haven't you?
It wouldn't do you any harm to spend a little time in the guard library. You'd be surprised at some of the stuff they've got there.
Can we get back to Bode's murder? These notes aren't just about his research, you know. I saved the best for last. Take a look at this.
She handed Hawk a sheaf of letters from the desk. He looked quickly through them, his frown gradually deepening. Someone hired Bode to investigate something having to do with the Street of Gods. The details had been left deliberately vague, as though the writer hadn't wanted to commit anything incriminating to paper. Presumably, he and the sorcerer had known what they were talking about at any rate.
Whatever Bode found out, someone didn't want him passing it on.
This is crazy. What was Bode doing messing around on the Street of Gods? They'd have eaten him alive, literally in some cases. I'm starting to get a really bad feeling about this case, Isabel.
Oh, you always say that at the beginning of a case, Hawk.
And I'm usually right.
That's Haven for you.
The door behind them flew open and the Dark Man filled the doorway. Hawk and Fisher spun to face him, weapons at the ready. The Dark Man's hand snapped forward and the severed head flew through the air and struck Hawk on the forehead. Hawk had a brief glimpse of the staring eyes and gaping mouth, and then he was staggering backwards, pain blinding him, his thoughts vague and muzzy. Fisher quickly stepped forward to stand between him and the Dark Man. She kicked the head and it rolled away across the floor. The Dark Man charged forward and Fisher thrust at him with her sword. He dodged the blade with inhuman speed, darted inside her reach and grabbed her by the arm. She struck at him with her fist, but he didn't even notice. He threw her against the wall with sickening force, driving the breath out of her. She started to slide down the wall, but the dark man grabbed her by the throat with one hand and lifted her into the air. Her feet kicked helplessly, inches above the floor. He was still smiling. Then Hawk stepped forward, swinging his axe double-handed, and buried it in the dark man's side. The dark man staggered to one side, dropping Fisher to the floor. Hawk jerked his blade free, and blood flew on the air. He and the dark man stood facing each other for a moment, each judging the other's condition. The dark man was bleeding freely, but otherwise showed no weakness from his wound. Hawk had a huge bruise forming on his forehead, and his hands weren't as steady as he would have liked. The dark man's smile widened slightly. The dark man lunged. Hawk buried his axe deep in the dark man's chest, but he just kept coming. And then he froze suddenly. All the hate and savagery went out of his face, to be replaced by something like surprise. He turned his head slowly to look at Fisher, who was leaning against the wall, and then he fell forward onto his face and lay still. Hawk looked at Fisher. The suppressor stone was glowing brightly in her hand like a miniature star. Hawk grinned at her.
Told you it would come in handy.
He pulled his axe free. Fisher came over to join him, and they leaned on each other for a moment.
I should have worked it out before. If he was a homunculus, he was a magical construct. The suppressor stone took away his magic, and there was nothing left to hold him together.
I'm going to have to pay more attention in morning briefings.
Hawk and Fisher were snatching a late breakfast at a fast food stall when the familiar sound of a gong filled their minds. Hawk nearly choked on his mouthful of sausage, and Fisher burnt her tongue on the mustard. They drew no comfort from the dry, acidic voice of the guard communication sorcerer.
Captains Hawk and Fisher, you are to report to the Deity Division on the Street of Gods. Your orders are waiting for you there. You are seconded to the division until further notice. End of message.
Hawk shook his head gingerly.
Duh! If he doesn't stop using that damn gong, I swear I'm going to pay him a visit and stick it somewhere painful.
From what I hear, you'd have to get in line. Oh, this would have to happen now. Right in the middle of a murder case.
Not to mention breakfast.
The Deity Division. What the hell does the God Squad want with us?
Beats me. Maybe a god's gotten out of hand and they want us to lean on him?
I hope you're not going to talk like that on the Street of Gods, Hawk. Because if you are, I'd appreciate it if you'd keep well away from me. As I understand it, most gods don't have a sense of humor. And the few that do are very dark about it. After all, we're talking about beings who tend to strike down heretics with lightning bolts and dispense plagues of boils when church offerings are down the week before.
You worry too much.
And often it's because of you.
The Street of Gods lies in the center of Haven, right in the middle of the high-rent district. Hundreds of religions crowd side by side up and down the street, promising hope and salvation, doom and destruction, and whatever else people need to keep them from thinking about the darkness at the end of all life. Everyone needs something to believe in, something that offers comfort in the face of despair. And whatever it is you're looking for, you'll find it somewhere on the Street of Gods. Churches and temples of all kinds stand shoulder to shoulder, each proclaiming the glory of its particular god and ostentatiously ignoring everyone else's. Everywhere you look, there's a high priest claiming to know the truth of all existence and ready to share it with the faithful in return for regular tithes and offerings. Religion is big business in Haven. According to the official city maps, the Street of Gods is exactly half a mile long. In fact, the street is as long as it has to be to fit everything in. It's possible to start at one end of the street, walk all day, and still not reach the far end before night falls. And then there are always the little side streets and back alleys, unmarked on any map, where the persistent inquirer can find the more controversial faiths and religions, the existence of which is often hotly denied in the clear light of day. There are doors that lead to mysteries, to wonders, and to nightmares, and few of them can be found in the same place twice. Reality tends to be rather elastic on the Street of Gods. The Deity Division, commonly known as the God Squad, exists to keep order on the street. The City Council appoints its members, pays its wages, and does its best to pretend the squad doesn't exist. Most of the time, they try to pretend the whole damn street doesn't exist. It makes them nervous. On the whole, things tend to be quiet on the street. The great majority of beings prefer to believe they're the only ones there and won't even admit the existence of any other churches. But the street endures the occasional feuds and vendettas, human and inhuman natures being what they are. The God Squad was there to try and head off confrontations before they happened, whenever possible. Sometimes it wasn't possible, and that was when the squad earned their money.
You worked with the squad once, didn't you, Isabel?
Hawk and Fisher made their way through the slush-covered streets toward the heart of the city. The sun was starting its slow climb up the sky, and the freezing streets were full of well-wrapped people heading to and from work.
Briefly, it was while you were working on that werewolf case, the one where young Hightower died. I was teamed with five other guards on the shattered bullion case, and we spent a few days working with the God Squad. Didn't come to anything.
What were they like?
Stuck-up bunch, as I recall.
Well, apart from that, give me some details, Isabel. Like it or not, we've got to work with these people, and I'd like to know what I'm getting into.
Well, the squad is always made up of three people. A sorcerer, a mystic, and a warrior. Individuals come and go, but the mix stays the same. Presumably, the council are so relieved at finally finding a balance that works, they don't want to mess with it. This particular group has been together for 4 years, and they've got a good track record. The sorcerer is called Toom. Cheerful name. He's a bit older than we are. Quiet, thoughtful, powerful as all hell. And so easygoing, it's disgusting. One of those people who prides himself on never raising his voice. A pigeon could crap on his head and he wouldn't even ask for a handkerchief. He'll probably have ulcers by the time he's 40. The mystic is called Rowan. She's young, a pleasant enough sort. But there's something kind of crazy about her. Heavily into signs and omens and herbalistic remedies. She gave me an herb tea for my head cold, and I had the runs for 2 days. She's got the sight and a few minor magics, but mostly she earns her keep by figuring out how the various beings think. She's supposed to be very good at that, probably because she's just as weird as they are. The warrior is Charles Buchan. You must have heard of him. The greatest duelist, intriguer, and womanizer this city's ever known. Mid-40s... handsome, daring, and debonair, and about as modest as a peacock. Been getting into scrapes all his life, and talking and fighting his way out of them with equal ease. But he really shouldn't have sneaked past the king's guards and gone to bed with the king's latest mistress on the same night the king decided to pay her a visit. Apparently, he was given a straight choice, a career in the guard or a lifetime in jail. How we ended up in the God Squad is anybody's guess. But he's taken to it like a politician takes to bribes.
And this is the group we're joining. Wonderful. I'm going to hate this assignment. I just know it. I was looking forward to working on the dead sorcerer case. How is it that whenever there's a particularly dangerous or unpleasant job that needs doing, our names rise to the top of the list?
Because we're the best. And because we're too honest for our own good. The odds are we were getting too close to something sensitive, and someone wanted us out of the way for a while.
Someone among our own superiors in the guard.
Probably.
Sons of bitches.
They came finally to the Street of Gods and stepped suddenly out of winter and into summer. The snow and slush stopped dead at the entrance to the street. The air was dry and warm. A bright midday sun shone overhead in a clear blue sky. Hawk looked at Fisher, but neither of them said anything. The Street of Gods went its own way and followed its own rules, whatever they were. Hawk and Fisher made their way down the street, staring resolutely straight ahead. They'd visited the street before while working on their last case and knew how easy it was to get distracted. Crowds of priests and worshippers bustled back and forth on unknown errands, and the air was full of the clamor of the street preachers, spreading the word to anyone who would listen. A huge shadow plunged the street into gloom for a moment as something impossibly massive passed by overhead. Hawk didn't look up. Whatever it was, he didn't want to know. The shadow passed on and the bright sunlight returned. Hawk began to sweat heavily under his furs and cloak. Something like a man-sized toad squatted on a street. The begging bowl before it was filled with bloody pieces of meat. Something long and spindly with too many legs scuttled up the side of a building, hugging a dead cat to its thorax. A small child with ancient eyes thrust steel pins through its own arms, grinning obscenely. A street preacher levitated 3 or 4 feet above the ground, his head hanging back, his face a mask of ecstasy. Only the tourists paid any attention. It took more than mere exhibitionism to attract a following on the Street of Gods. The God Squad's headquarters turned out to be a squat little two-story building tucked away in one of the many quiet backwaters off the Street of Gods. Hawk knocked twice on the discreet front door, and then he and Fisher waited patiently on the front step, keeping a watchful eye on the area just in case. The narrow black alley seemed calm and quiet, but Hawk wasn't ready to take anything on trust in the Street of Gods. The door finally opened, revealing a short, bald man in his early 30s, dressed in sorcerer's black. He beamed at the two guards like a benevolent uncle, and it took Hawk a moment to realize that this pleasant-looking fellow had to be the sorcerer, Tomb.
Captain Fisher, my dear, how nice to see you again. And you must be Captain Hawk. Delighted. Do come in. We've been expecting you.
He ushered the two guards down a short passage and into a small but comfortably appointed drawing room.
So nice that you could join us. We've a most fascinating case right now. Of course you'll be interested in that. I know you two like to get right onto cases. It's such an admirable quality. I'm afraid I could use some of your intensity. And how have you been, Captain Fisher? I must say you're looking fit and handsome as ever. How nice for you and your husband to be able to work together. Living every minute of the day together has ruined many a marriage, but I understand it seems to strengthen yours. Wonderful.
He fussed around them as they settled into their chairs, keeping up a pleasant chatter all the while. Hawk took all of this with a pinch of salt. Tomb might like to come across as everyone's favorite relative, but you don't get to be a first-class sorcerer through good intentions and a charming personality. It took long years of single-minded dedication and not a little ruthlessness. Hawk smiled politely and made a mental note not to turn his back on this sorcerer. He didn't trust people who smiled too much. Tomb finally produced an exquisite cut-glass decanter and poured three generous glasses of sherry. Hawk took his and sipped it perfunctorily. He never much cared for the syrupy stuff, but he knew Fisher loved it. Tomb stopped talking for a moment as he savored his own sherry, and Hawk took advantage of the pause to get in a few words of his own.
Pardon me, Sir Tomb, but perhaps you could inform us as to what we're doing here. Usually when the God Squad needs help, you call in the special wizardry and tactics team. What good can a couple of ordinary guards do you?
Tomb bit his lower lip and looked suddenly furtive.
If you don't mind, Captain Hawk, I think we ought to wait until both of my colleagues are here. They won't be long. The situation is rather complicated.
As the door flew open, Hawk and Fisher looked around, startled, as a stocky young woman strode in. She stood glaring at Hawk and Fisher for a long moment, nose in the air and hands on her hips. She was short, barely 5 feet in height, which made her look even heavier than she was, and her round, pleasant face was marred by a perpetual scowl. Her dark hair was cropped short like a helmet, and her heavy eyebrows intensified her fierce demeanor. The dark, shapeless robe she wore was more suited to an older woman. She couldn't have been much into her 20s, but she looked at least 10 years older.
What are they doing here?
She switched her glare to the sorcerer Tomb.
I told you I didn't want them here.
The council sent them. They seem to think we could do with a little help.
If we can't work out what the hell's going on with all our experience, I don't see how a couple of strong-armed bullies from the guard are going to help.
That's enough, Rowan.
Hawk studied Tomb thoughtfully over his sherry glass. It would seem the sorcerer had hidden depths after all. Hawk was just nerving himself to try another sip of his sherry when a tall, muscular man strode in, shoulders back, head held high. Hawk didn't need Fisher to tell him that this was the notorious Charles Buchan. He was handsome in a harsh, brooding way, with a head of close-cropped blonde curls and icy blue eyes, and his arms and chest showed the kind of muscle definition you only get from lifting weights. He was supposed to be in his 40s, but his superb physique made him look a good 10 years younger. He was dressed in the latest fashion and wore it well, which took some doing when you considered that the latest style consisted of tightly cut trousers and a padded jerkin with a chin-high collar. In fact, if the trousers had been cut any more tightly, Hawk would have seriously considered arresting the man for indecent exposure. Buchan's clothes were brightly colored, but stopped just short of being garish. So short that the effect had to be intentional. Hawk couldn't help noticing that the outfit had been carefully tailored so that there was plenty of give around the chest and shoulders. Charles Buchan might like to look up to the minute, but he clearly wasn't prepared to let that interfere with his fighting abilities. Hawk shot a glance at Fisher to see what she made of the man, and was disturbed to find her studying Buchan with a smile on her face. Hawk's eyebrows had just started to descend into a scowl when Buchan stepped forward and greeted them cheerfully, slapping Hawk just a little too hard on the shoulder.
Captains!
Hawk winced despite himself. Buchan turned to Fisher, who extended a hand to him. He took her hand, raised it to his lips, and kissed it expertly, his eyes on hers. Hawk's scowl deepened. Fisher didn't normally let people kiss her hand. Buchan let go of her hand with becoming reluctance and straightened up to his full height, pulling back his shoulders a little so as to show off his broad chest and flat stomach.
So, this is the famous partnership of Hawk and Fisher. I've heard a lot about you. All of it good. Glad to have you with us on this case. I'm sure it's going to be fascinating working with you. But I'm afraid there isn't that much for you to do, actually. I've no doubt we'll solve this case soon enough. We always do, you know. Still, I'm sure we can find something to keep you occupied while you're here.
I'll bet he smokes a pipe and cracks nuts with his bare hands. A devil with the ladies and a natural leader of men. Given a few spare minutes, I think I could learn to hate this guy.
Indeed. If you don't mind, Charles, I'd like to take this opportunity to explain to our new friends why they're here.
Of course, don't mind me. Go straight ahead.
Buchan leaned back against the doorway, took a pipe from his pocket, and began cleaning it. A hush fell over the room as everyone looked at Toom. He frowned slightly, as though uncertain where to start.
We find ourselves in a rather unusual situation, Captain Hawk, Captain Fisher. My associates and I have worked on many strange cases in our time in the squad, but I have to say we've never encountered anything quite like this. To put it bluntly, someone is killing the gods of Haven.
Hawk and Fisher looked at each other.
Go on.
We've lost three beings so far. The Dreadlord, the Sundered Man, and the Carmadine Stalker. We don't know how they died or why, but all three have been utterly destroyed. If we don't come up with some explanation soon, the gods are going to panic, and the Street of Gods could end up as a battleground. There are a lot of old grudges among the gods, and it wouldn't take much to set them in each other's throats.
I didn't think gods could die.
Call them beings, if it will help. If you're to be of any help to us, you have to understand how the Street of Gods operates. There are all kinds of religion here. Some old, some new, some just fashions of the moment. Most are based around supernatural entities who have gathered a following through displays of power and promises of worldly dominion. Everyone wants to be on the winning side, to have a powerful protector watching out for them. Then there are human preachers whose teachings have developed into a religion. Their churches tend to last the longest. Ideas are much more powerful and enduring than some magical being with an ego problem. Religions come and go, and we try to keep the peace. Some of them are strange, some of them are beautiful, and some we don't understand at all. People can believe in the weirdest things if they're frightened or desperate enough. We don't take sides. We just try to keep the feuds and vendettas under control and make sure that whatever troubles there may be don't pass beyond the Street of Gods.
How do you do that?
Toom smiled.
Talking things through, playing off one faction against another, and a lot of improvising. If things start to get too out of hand, we call in the SWAT team. If that fails, we turn to the Exorcist Stone. That's our last resort. Essentially, it's a much more powerful version of the Suppressor Stone the Council's been experimenting with. The Exorcist Stone dispels all magic from an area, no matter how powerful, and can even banish a being from this plane of existence.
Banish? You mean destroy?
We don't know. They disappear and they don't come back. We settle for that. We use the stone very sparingly, only when there's a threat to the whole city. If the beings decided we were a threat to them, they'd band together and destroy us, stone or no stone.
Is that how the gods have been dying? Someone's got hold of an exorcist stone of their own?
That's impossible. There's only one stone, and no one knows how old it is or how it was created. If by chance there was another, we'd know about it. Every magic user for hundreds of miles around would know about it. The sheer power involved would blaze like a beacon in their mind's eye. No one but the three of us has access to the Exorcist Stone, and it's impossible for any of us to misuse it. When we join the God Squad, the Council places a spell of compulsion on us to prevent any of us from using the Exorcist Stone except in the line of duty.
But still, the gods keep dying. Their bodies destroyed, their presence dispersed. We've tried to investigate, but we have no experience in such matters. We've gotten nowhere. We don't even know what to look for. So far, the gods' followers are still in shock, too dazed to do anything but sit around and pray for their gods to return. When that doesn't happen, they're going to get angry and start looking for scapegoats.
And if that wasn't bad enough, we're starting to hear rumblings from the other beings. The three unexplained deaths have left them feeling vulnerable and afraid. It's only a matter of time before they decide to take matters into their own hands. We could end up with a god war on the street. I don't think Haven could survive such a war. I'm not even sure the Low Kingdoms would survive.
So we sent to the Council for help, and they sent us you.
The notorious Hawk and Fisher, a pair of thugs in uniform. I know all about your reputation. You're the most violent guards in Haven. You don't care who you hurt. No one knows how many people you've killed.
You should visit the North Side. Might open your eyes to a few things. Northsiders don't believe in reasoned argument or diplomacy. They tend more to poisoning your wine or slipping a dagger between your ribs. Or both. We have the highest murder rate, the worst violence, and the highest general crime rate in all Haven. We're only as hard as we have to be to get results. That's all the Council cares about.
That says maybe, but I feel it only fair to warn you that I won't tolerate such strong-arm tactics here. They just get you killed, you and anyone else unfortunate enough to be with you at the time. I must insist that while you're a part of the squad, you follow my orders at all times. Is that clear?
Sure.
Of course.
Toom looked at them both suspiciously. He'd expected to have to argue the point, and their giving in so easily worried him. It wasn't in character. He pursed his lips and decided to let it pass for the moment.
There is one other thing we need to discuss. What religion do you both follow? What do you believe in?
Death and taxes. Everything else is negotiable.
Hard cash, cold beer, and an axe with a good edge. Isabel and I were both raised as Christians. I've seen a lot of darkness in my time, but I still trust in the light.
Christianity. The old religion. You're from the northern countries originally, I take it? Yes, I thought I recognized your accents. I'm afraid your religion isn't much practiced in the Low Kingdoms, though of course many of its terms still survive in the language. We rarely must sit down and discuss this someday.
Christians! I thought you people believed in love and peace, and turning the other cheek and all that other orthodox nonsense.
Isabel and I are a bit unorthodox.
Well, just remember, you're only here on sufferance. All the guards we could have had, and they had to send us a pair of Christians.
Apparently you have a friend on the council.
Counselor Adamant, to be exact. I understand you behaved very creditably while working as his bodyguards during the election, though why he thinks that should qualify you to work on the Street of Gods is beyond me.
We fought a god on his behalf. The Abomination, the Lord of the Gulfs. We helped kill it.
A sudden silence fell across the room. The three members of the God Squad looked at Hawk and Fisher almost respectfully.
That was you?
Well, we had some help.
Fisher's mouth twitched.
I don't believe it.
That's your problem.
Hawk turned away to look at Toom and Buchan.
Fisher and I aren't exactly strangers to the Street of Gods. We've been here before. And while we might not have much experience in dealing with beings, we do know how to track down murderers. That's our job. We're very good at it.
Rowan suddenly looked at Toom.
People are gathering out on the street. They seem angry, disturbed. I don't like the feel of it, Toom.
I can see them, Rowan. Two large factions closing on each other. Damn, there's going to be another riot. Charles, Rowan, gather your equipment. Hawk and Fisher, come with me. You're about to see what happens when the rules break down on the Street of Gods. You should find it an interesting experience, if you survive it.